Good morning. I'm going to give you a quick update here from the concussion education policy perspective from the high school setting. With the three experts here, we're trying to take the information and the research they're doing and applying it across the country with our member state associations and member high schools. The National Federation of State High School Associations, we're located in Indianapolis downtown, small little building to the left there connected right on to the NCAA. We're the national leadership organization that oversees high school sports and fine arts activities. We're more known for writing the playing rules for high school sports. Kind of been the leading authority working with our rules committees in the development of that. In turn, working with our state high school associations with that. The one thing you got to keep in mind, we cannot mandate our rules. We work with our state high school associations. They autonomously adopt our playing rules for use with their member high schools, with the sports that they sanction within their states. That's a key element to understand with some of the information that I'll share with you as I move forward. We're made up of 50 member state high school associations right here at District of Columbia also, so we've got 51 state high school associations. Within that framework, we reach out to about 19,000 high schools across the country, which in turn relates to about 11 million participants in school activity programs. That would include athletic and fine arts. But overall, that breakdown is about 7.6 young men and women participate in high school sports across the country. So we've got far-reaching impact with what you hear on the research and the educational efforts with us trying to reach out with those state high school associations. Our mission statement, when working with our Sports Medicine Advisory Committee, we've got a 18-member Sports Medicine Advisory Committee made up of some of the top medical and research experts across the country that helps advise not only the Federation, but our rules committees, and in turn works directly with our state high school associations and their Sports Medicine Advisory Committee. Now, the key thing that we're trying to do is proactively address health and safety issues with concern not only the NFHS, but our membership. We've got better access at the national level to resources than, let's say, some of our state high school associations may have only within their state, but may not have access at the national level. This is a key slide here when you look at it. When we look at state high school associations and those states that do have an active sports medicine advisory committee. When I came on staff at the NFHS about 2006, we only had about 30 state high school associations that had an active sports medicine advisory committee. We're not quite there yet. We're 5 years down the road. We've still got three states that do not have an active. They more or less have a sports medicine advisory committee that they'll use on a consulting basis, but they do not have an active sports medicine advisory committee. So anything that we try and do at the state, at the national level, to hand down to the state association to assist them and vice versa, either way, this is key that we've got active membership within those sports medicine advisory committees from the state association. Our goal, hopefully, is to get that whole map looking orange with every state having one in place. As mentioned earlier here, Julie mentioned some of the information that Dr. Dom Comstock and her staff, Nationwide Children's Hospital, is doing from the injury surveillance perspective. We've been actively involved with this, and it has been key, and I mean key, to the development of rules, playing rules, sports rules, in all of our sports that we write, for 17 sports that we write the rules on. But the data goes back because previously, before 2005, we were using the injury surveillance data from the NCAA. Different rules, different game, different individuals. But we tried to at least get a snapshot of what was happening. Now, with the data being taken from sports, with high school athletes, with our rules, we now can make correlations. Was that rule change that we made, did it increase risk or decrease risk? So the injury data plays a key role in our rules-making process at the NFHS. Now, the burden of concussions, you've seen the data here, a snapshot, but then it goes, the question comes, well, why should the Federation really worry about this? This kind of correlates back to some of the stuff that Steve showed just a minute ago. When you look at it, we write the rules right here for those sports. You're seeing the burden of concussions listed in those sports. We need to try and address that, either through injury surveillance, through our sports medicine, or through our rules writing process within the game. So we have to take that and take it another step further. The rule books that we write here, these are the sports that we write the playing rules for. We do offer, a lot of our state associations offer other sports that we may not write the rules for. Let's say skiing. Some states do sanction skiing in their state. We don't write the rules for that. Golf, we don't write the rules. They use USGA rules for that. But what you see listed right here are the rules that the NFHS writes. We put out rule books, we put out case books, we put out manuals. Example, the rule book you see here would be used by officials, coaches, state high school associations at the high school level. Now keep in mind, our rules are written for the varsity level competition. Now a lot of our states turn around and adopt those rules for JV, freshman, sophomore. Sometimes they'll take it down for junior high also. And some of the youth leagues use our rules for the varying sports also. Within our rules, and this is in every one of our rule books, we've got standardized language dealing with concussions, and we've had this in since the 60s. We tweaked it back in 2010-11 to basically clear up the language we did have in there. It said, do not return a play until cleared by an MD or a DO. But we were starting to see at that time, 2010-11, the legislation that was coming forward. So we put forth, working with different state associations, our committee and our sports medicine and legal, putting in the term appropriate healthcare professional, because that goes back to the state laws, state legislation. Absent that, the sports medicine advisory committee in those states determine who that appropriate healthcare professional is. But this is standardized language that we've got in all of our rules books to give guidance. Now, within this, I'll kind of break it out a little bit. With that rule in place, what do our state associations have to do? And these are a couple of the key, and I won't address every one of them. But the key thing, they've got to look at what state legislation. We know right now 33 states have got legislation in place or concussion laws to dictate this. They need to determine who the appropriate healthcare professional is. Is it an MD, DO, nurse practitioner, physical therapist, chiropractor? Whatever it may be dictated within that law, they got to make that determination for the return to play. That's key. And then the key thing is education, which we'll touch on. The appropriate healthcare professionals, which applies to a lot of you in here, need to be aware of not only the rules that we've got in place in our rule books, but also what is in place with regard to the laws. You also need to understand the key role that you play and the appropriate healthcare professionals play in this return to play process. And I think that's an educational piece that we're still working on. We're not there yet because some of our rural parts of the country, that is a challenge. And the continual need to stay updated with the knowledge. There's so much research going on right now in concussions that's changing a little bit, but we need to make sure they stay educated. Coaches play a key role with this because they're on the front lines with this. And we've got to do a better job with them. Because it was alluded to right now, the mentality at our level, at the high school level, unfortunately, and we still see this, is a lot of our coaches, the athletes, parents, athletic administrators, do not think an athlete has sustained a concussion unless there's a loss of consciousness. We've closed that gap, but we've got to really close that to the point where it's almost nothing. With coaches, education is the key with this, because they are the ones dealing with the return to play. And we got to put aside the winning aspect and protect our young men and women participating in sports. Our officials applying the rules. We've got rules in place to hopefully protect the individuals here with this. They need to follow that and also the protocols that are in place. Within our rule books, we have suggested guidelines for management of concussion piece. Here again, that's in every one of the rule books in the back in appendix, very general. With that, we've got equipment guidelines. With this, we do not test equipment. We rely on standards-making body, whether it be NOCSI, ASTM, HEC, to come up with that, and that goes back to also relying on the manufacturers to develop equipment that's going to be in compliance with our rules and also protect the individuals. But here again, that's based off the research. Concussion education, as we allude to, develop coach education is a key element that we've done in this. The awareness and recognition, this is where we're really trying to take the lead with this with our member state high school associations. We teamed up and worked very closely with the CDC on this, with our Heads Up program prior to this, and continue to do work and disseminate that information to our member state high school association and our schools across the country. But one of the courses that we really came out with in June 2010, Concussion in Sports, What You Need to Know. When we launched this in June 2010, to date, we've had 322,000 individuals take and complete this course. Part of the laws and legislation that are out there right now require this course. Coaches have got to take it. Officials have got to take it. We're just pleased with the numbers, but this is a 20-minute free course. I encourage you, if you get a chance, get on our website and participate with that. Some of the resources in there, we try and give them access to and the information to better assist them. We've come out with fundamentals of coaching courses in all of our sports. This one that you see here is football. Here again, techniques. We're no longer in the stage of a teacher coach. A lot of our coaches are coming in out of the community, do not have the background. So we're coming up with coaching courses to better educate those individuals. We utilize our website for the educational aspect. We've come out with a sports medicine handbook. We distributed this copy, written by our sports medicine advisory committee. 19,000 copies went out to every high school, free of charge across the country this past year, a fourth edition. Very informative. We do have a concussion chapter within this here. Not too complex, but we try and keep it general and to the point. Our sports medicine advisory committee has also come out with position statements. Here again, not mandates. But we're trying to educate and assist our state association, suggested guidelines for management of concussion, and parents' guide to concussion in sports with this. We give it to the state association. They then, in turn, share it with their schools. And it's basically taken along with the information that the experts up here have shared with us and been very open, also from what the work that the CDC has done. And our last element here that we really reach out to is our magazine, High School Today. We send this out to every superintendent, principal, athletic director, and school in the country. Probably about 100,000 copies that go out on a monthly basis with this. We do have a sports medicine feature every month in it. This was our October issue right now, dealing with academic accommodations after sports-related concussion that we go with. Future direction, to wrap things up here, that we at the high school perspective are looking forward to and we're constantly working with state and federal concussion legislation. With 33 states having it, we're not there yet. We've still got to see what's coming forward, what's also coming federal. We've got to be aware and work with our states and our schools with that. Concussion education, we can never do enough. We assist with the work that you're doing, with the researchers are doing, but getting that out to the people that can make a difference. From our side, the playing rules and equipment to minimize risk, making sure we're doing everything from the rules perspective to decrease that risk. Injury surveillance and concussion research is ongoing, very, very important to our rules-making process and also to our state association. But the big one right now is the academic accommodation after sports-related concussion. This is one that we're hearing from our state high school associations and our member schools across the country they need help with. Because as you saw some of the data that Steve and Jerry and Julie talked about, this is that unknown. Great, they suffer concussion on Friday night, but when they come back into school on Monday, what else can we do to assist them? So that's the future direction that we want to go with that. So on behalf of the NFHS, our 51 member state high school associations, our 7.6 young men and women participating in high school sports, I say thank you for the job that you're doing in your communities to protecting the safety and well-being of our kids. Thank you.